We're so glad you're here. My name is Mark. I'm the senior pastor here at Bethel Church. That's where I fit into this whole deal. It's a privilege to speak to you this morning, again, online or in our building. Years ago, there was an experiment conducted, and I don't think you would want to be part of this experiment where there was a guy that stood in a bucket of cold water up to his ankles, perhaps, maybe shins, and this world of academia, they wanted to determine how long he could stand in that bucket of cold water. And so maybe millions of dollars were spent, and they put someone beside him in this bucket of cold water, not in the bucket, but just beside the bucket, and that person's job was to encourage the guy in the bucket of cold water. And so after hours and hours and thousands of pages of reports, they concluded that, like, did you know that if you have somebody stand beside you in a bucket of cold water, you will perhaps stand in that bucket twice as long as if you don't have someone standing beside you? And you're supposed to go, wow. Or maybe like, I could have figured that out with this without the study, right? You know, some of these studies are actually quite interesting. So that was the phenomenal discovery, the power of encouragement. Well, what do we take away from that? Well, you know, maybe you this morning find yourself standing in a bucket of cold water, you know, and maybe it's not just up to your shins, maybe it's right up to your neck. If I were to ask you this morning, ever stood in a bucket of cold water in terms of a trial or a difficulty? I know what your answer would be. Ever been tempted to jump out too soon? Did you have anyone standing maybe next to you or actually in the bucket with you to help you out? As you think back to that cold water experience, do you realize that you would never have succeeded? You would never have gotten through that season, that trial, that difficulty, without somebody encouraging you? As they say, encouragement is oxygen to the soul. There's a really interesting story is told about these two guys on the next screen here. The guy on the left is Tolkien, and the guy on the right is C.S. Lewis. And if you are a fan of The Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit, you might be surprised that the author, Tolkien, the guy on the left, required encouragement of a friend and fellow writer to keep him going in the early stages of his work on those books. History tells us that C.S. Lewis and Tolkien and a few others would gather weekly in a group they called the Inklings. And they met weekly to share what they were working on and to encourage one another. Tolkien credited Lewis as the person who kept him going when he felt very, very discouraged. Had it not been for Lewis, this author says, Tolkien wouldn't have written The Lord of the Rings. In fact, Tolkien wrote in a letter, here are his words, "The unspeakable debt I owe him, Lewis, cannot be fathomed. For long he was my only audience. Several times Tolkien really threw in the towel," the author now says, "and each time Lewis said," I love these words, "Tollers, where's the next chapter? You can't give up now. Where's the next chapter? You just can't give up now." And Tollers, of course, wrote that book. And Lewis was the only one in that season that kept him going. I mean, how many people need encouragement? Everybody needs encouragement, right? We all need encouragement. But how many people give encouragement? Not everybody. We all need it, but we all don't extend it. Well, there's a group of people in our text today who need encouragement. If you're visiting with us, or if this is one of your first Sundays at Bethel, we've been working through the book of 1 Timothy. The Apostle Paul is writing Timothy, his protege. Timothy is an elder in a church in the city of Ephesus. And so Paul has written on a number of issues. And there's a group of people that he comes to today who need encouragement. Last week, we looked at the topic of widows. And we concluded with this idea that the Word of God needs to shape the work of God. And we talked about how, well, Paul talks about it, we need to honor widows. This idea, honor, of I see you, I recognize your worth and your value, your contribution, your needs. Well, Paul now proceeds in this letter to church leadership. In particular, he talks about elders. And he talks about an issue that a lot of us are familiar with. So if you've grown up in the church, you'll go, oh yeah, I've read this text before. I'm very familiar with this text. Because as he goes into these verses, talks about leadership, talks about the issue of remuneration, the role that some elders have of preaching and teaching, bivocational perhaps. He talks about not muzzling an ox to justify his ask. And he even quotes Jesus, apparently, when he says the laborer is worth his wages. And so we could come to this text, which is 1 Timothy chapter 5, and I'll give you the verses in a moment here, but you can get your fingers warmed up or your buttons warmed up as you get to that text. 1 Timothy chapter 5. And we could talk about church leadership structure, because there's hints of that in the book of Timothy. We could talk about remuneration of elders and teaching elders and all of that. We could talk about the role of preaching and teaching. And that would all be good, and that would be a fair way to treat this text. But I want us to pull something from this text this morning that perhaps is not often seen or emphasized, but it's there. And it's the issue of encouragement and appreciating elders. But not just elders, but leadership in general. I think we'd all agree that leadership needs encouragement. Very specifically, leadership at Bethel in this season needs your encouragement, needs your oxygen. Because sometimes the journey of leadership, as we all know, is like standing in a bucket of cold water. We need someone saying to us, to leadership, where's that next chapter? You can't give up now. And the reason why this is so important is because leaders are human too, and they need encouragement. I was in a meeting this week, not with church leaders, but just with city leaders, and we were talking about how do you develop leadership within your organization, and how do you sustain that? And one of the ways that you develop leaders within an organization, not only develop leaders, but sustain leadership, I think we'd all agree, is the powerful tool of encouragement. Encouragement. See, leaders need encouragement because leaders are human too. So take your Bible, 1 Timothy chapter 5, and we always say at Bethel, make sure you follow along so that I'm not teaching some kind of heretical view here. I'm accountable to you. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 17 and 18. And we're just going to walk through this text. So notice what it says. Again, you're going to go, yeah, I've heard this one before, this particular text. It says in 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 17, let the elders who rule well be considered worthy of double honor, especially those who labor in preaching and teaching. For the scripture says, you shall not muzzle an ox when it treads out the grain, and the laborer deserves his wages. So we look at this text this morning and we see that it talks about eldership. And we could ask the question, well, what specifically is he talking about in terms of an elder, an older person? Or one of the ways that this word can be used is someone with authority, someone's in a position of leadership. So really simply, you look at the context and you say, well, he's obviously talking about leadership because he says, let the elders who rule well be considered of double honor. Now, Paul has raised this issue of eldership back in chapter 3. We looked at that a couple of months ago, and we noticed one thing that really stands out is that the qualifications of leadership doesn't start necessarily where a lot of people will start, and that is skill and talent and all of that, and sometimes charisma. Those are not as important as what Paul brings up in chapter 3, which is character, right? And we talked about character deficiencies within leadership and how interesting it was that when Paul talks about eldership, the big push was on this issue of character. Well, now he comes back to this issue of eldership, and notice what he raises here. He doesn't raise an issue of character, but he actually talks about a need that leadership has. And you might say, well, Mark, how does that come up? Well, notice what he says in verse 17, let an elder who rules well be considered worthy of, notice what he says, double honor. So he's already talked about honoring widows who are truly widows, and now he talks about honoring elders. But he talks about double honor. So what does honor mean? Does double honor mean you should pay elders who teach exorbitant amounts of money? Is that what that means? Any takers on that? I don't think so. And I don't think that's what it means. But you got to take it in context. Okay, he's talked about honoring widows. I see you. I value you as a person. And now he comes to this issue of eldership, and he says elders are worthy of double honor. Well, we know one of the things that he's talking about in this text, as you read it in context, is he's talking about adequate remuneration. Seems pretty clear from the context, the quotation from Deuteronomy about oxes, and then even quoting Jesus. But notice that he says there's double honor. So what's the other piece? Well, there are two Greek geeks that I really appreciate, and Fee and Collins, who are scholars in this area, and they talk about how double honor is likely referring to the two sides of honor that Paul is getting at here, as you take it in the larger context of what he's already said about widows and honor, and now eldership. And so there's two sides. And so the one side that is often preached on from this part is where there's a financial aspect, remuneration, and that's true. But there's this other side of honor which has to do with encouragement and affirmation and appreciation and gratitude, just like two sides of a coin. So just like the widow needs to be honored, which says, I see you, I recognize your worth and your value and your contribution, your needs. Perhaps we could steal C.S. Lewis's line. Where's that next chapter? You can't give up now. This whole idea of double honor is bringing this idea of, yes, there's the financial piece, but there's this other side of honoring someone which has to do with encouragement. I mean, whether you're an elder or other kind of leader in the church, you're a man or a woman, leaders are like widows. They're human too, right? They bleed red. They have needs. They go through seasons. They have tear ducts that leak occasionally. They can find themselves standing in a cold bucket of water needing to write that next chapter. Use whatever analogy you wish. The bottom line, leadership in any context are human too and need encouragement, which is part of the whole idea of double honor. So I think everybody here listening this morning would agree with this, that leadership needs encouragement. That leadership needs oxygen, and that there are seasons where that oxygen is even more important than ever before for a leader to get through a difficult season. So here's the question that I want to ask, and I want to give two answers, and I think both of them will resonate much with each of you here, because in one sense, all of us are leaders. And the question is, why is this issue of encouragement so important, not just for elders, but for leaders in general, for leaders at Bethel, for leaders in your organization, for your own personal leadership? Why would you say encouragement is so, so important? Now, we could brainstorm on that, but let's just look at the text. And there's two things that Paul brings up here. Verse 17, he says, let an elder who rule well be considered worthy of double honor, especially those who labor in preaching and teaching. He uses this idea of leadership and labor. I would say one of the reasons, whether you're an elder in a church or whether you're a CEO in a business or a leader of a department or however your leadership is expressed, one of the reasons why leadership needs encouragement is because of the labor of leadership. I don't think there's anybody in this room that would disagree and say, those two words don't belong in the same sentence. Labor and leadership. I think a lot of you would say, oh, they sure do. Just like these words, the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Stanley Cup. They belong in the same sentence, don't they? Right, amen. They do, they absolutely do. I'm a person of tremendous faith. So, encouragement. Why do leaders need encouragement? Because of the labor of leadership. The word labor in this context means pretty much what it would mean in English. It means to be tired and grow weary of good things. Weariness is though one has been, in the extreme here, beaten down. Exertion. It also has this idea of trouble. I mean, you think of Tolkien and Lewis. Tolkien was tired. Lewis comes alongside and breathes oxygen into his soul. You know, where is that next chapter, Tolkien? It's not that the leader doesn't like what he's doing or she's doing. They're just downright tired. Why? Because leaders are human too. You think of all the frontline workers, for example. I was in a conversation this week with a frontline worker, and they were just saying, and we've talked about this over the last several months, how frontline workers, many of them cannot take the holidays that they need, that are built into their contracts. I see some of you that are in front lines nodding, saying, yes, you know, I got 4 weeks of holidays, but it's on paper, but it's not in reality. And the issue is, what? If I take my holidays, then perhaps I leave some patient vulnerable that may die because I'm not there. The shortages. And as I was talking to this gentleman, I was just struck again with the labor of leadership and the exertion and the fatigue that can come. And you think especially of our frontline workers. I mean, if you were to identify fatigue levels because of the labor of leadership, where would you score this morning? As you think about leadership in the past, perhaps leadership experience or your present day leadership assignment, whatever that might be. And it could be just the fact that you're a parent. That's leadership in the broadest sense. How would you score your fatigue levels? Perhaps this might help you, this next slide. Maybe you're terribly tired, tiny bit tired, totally tired. How's that? I mean, maybe you can identify with one of those. Think of Timothy on the tired scale. Timothy, the recipient of this letter, was he terribly tired, tiny bit tired, totally tired? And then I thought to myself, imagine if his nickname was Tiny Tim. And I thought, well, Tiny Tim, is he terribly tired? Is Tiny Tim tiny bit tired? Is Tiny Tim totally tired? Why might Timothy be tired? Why might he be tired? Well, if you read 1 Timothy, read 2 Timothy, he could be tired from dealing with conflict. We looked at that last week. You remember those widows? Those younger widows that were going through houses and they were idle and they were slandering and they were gossiping, but it wasn't just the widows, it was the men. They were teaching false doctrines. And so Timothy is perhaps totally tired of dealing with conflict here and dealing with conflict here. He's maybe tired of some people just falling away. In 1 and 2 Timothy, Paul mentions the names of individuals who have literally just fallen away from faith. Perhaps Timothy is tired of the personal training. We talked about training a couple of weeks ago, that if I'm a follower of Christ, I am a spiritual athlete. I might not be a physical athlete, but I'm a spiritual athlete, and I am training because that's what it requires. Maybe I'm tired of some of those disciplines, tired of the criticism. We know that Timothy was criticized because he was too young, right? He was too young. How can you be a leader? You're too young. Maybe he was tired of meeting the needs of people, like last week. I'm tired of meeting the needs of widows. Maybe he wouldn't say that out loud. I mean, how would these leaders rate on the following screen? Terribly tired, tiny bit tired, totally tired. I mean, how about you? How would you rate yourself? Or if you think back in the past where perhaps you had a heavy leadership portfolio, you might say, yeah, I went through a season, man, where, man, the labor of leadership was absolutely exhausting. I mean, sometimes in leadership, you have to work through harder than other seasons, and it can seem like it all uphill, right? And if you take your ball or eye off the ball, it just rolls back down the hill. Ask a leader where they're going, they might say, I'm going down the hill to get the ball that just rolled back down, right? The labor of leadership. I mean, in terms of Bethel, why might leaders be tired at Bethel? Well, here are some words that come to mind. Pivot. Just that idea that, I mean, leadership is always about pivoting. We all know that. But COVID has been pivoting on steroids, right? And that's a constant, constant drain. Or deficit, rebuilding volunteerism. And operating from a deficit position in terms of volunteers and just restoring that and rebuilding that. Or uncertainty, two steps forward, one step back. Three steps forward, six steps back. You know that little dance that we do sometimes, uncertainty. Marathon, it ain't over, is it? It is not over what we're going through. And then balance. The vast majority, for all of our volunteers, are volunteers. They have personal lives. They have jobs. They have school. They have things they do. And they are balancing all of this with sometimes the demand of leadership within the context of a church. Now, are there many examples of what can be encouraging? Absolutely. But that's not my purpose this morning to talk about all that. I want to highlight some of the factors that make the water cold at times. The fact that leaders are human too. They need encouragement. I mean, we have wonderful teams of leadership here. And over the last 14 years that I've been here almost, I have worked with some awesome, amazing leaders. Extremely, extremely grateful. And there are great leaders that are leading today. But leaders are human too. And leaders need encouragement because of the reality of the labor of leadership. The labor of leadership. But then notice the second and final answer to the question of why is it such an important issue, this whole issue of encouragement. I would say because of the routines of leadership. See, in verse 18, he talks about you shall not muzzle an ox when it treads out the grain and the laborer is worthy of her wages. Paul draws out this Old Testament imagery. And most of us know what this looks like, but this video will just play underneath what I'm saying here. And here's that imagery. This is a donkey, by the way, not an ox. Oxes are part of a union, and they were on strike when this video was made. But notice the threshing board and the breaking up of the chaff and the wheat and walks in circles. And then you'll note here in just a moment that the gentleman walking the donkey, I wonder if you ever named your pets like that, Zach, or let's call him Zach. Hopefully, is there a Zach here? Sorry if there's a Zach. And then they go get the winnowing fork and they throw up the broken up wheat into the air, the chaff and the kernels, and it just separates. And preferably you do that on a windy day, right? Well, have you ever felt like a donkey in leadership or an ox as what is being used here? You get harnessed up every Monday morning and unharnessed every Friday. But aren't we all thankful to the internet and social media? Sometimes you're harnessed up to your work even when you go home or on weekends. And I know those of you that are in this building who own your own businesses, man, I know you're saying, absolutely, man, Saturday, Sunday, it's hard to get away from work. Ever felt like you cannot get out of the harness? Now, routines are important, but sometimes when leadership seems like so much of it's uphill, they can be burdensome routines. Burdensome, right? Can you identify with that, the routines of leadership? For example, what did one ox say to another? I feel like we're going in, thank you, circles. Yeah. Ever felt like that? You feel like you're not making progress or you don't see the fruit of your labor? I mean, did the ox ever see that freshly baked bread from that beautiful wheat, smell it baking in the oven, and then you put butter on it, and then you put peanut butter on it, and then you put honey on it, then you put deli meat on it, and then, oh, gross, and then you put ketchup on it. Oh, gross, no, did they ever see the fruit of their labor, you know? As a leader, do you ever know in your brain you're being affected, but nonetheless, at times you feel like you're going in circles? Sometimes when going in circles, you need someone to say to you, you know, where's that next chapter? You can't give up now. What did one ox say to the other? Well, I feel like we're going in circles. Or here's another statement that ties into the first. Haven't we been here before? Similar issues keep emerging. All of you in leadership can identify with what I'm saying here. Have you ever given it your best shot as a leader only to find that all your efforts did not fix the problem, did not push the ball up the hill so that it would stay there? And then you think to yourself, here we go again. Remember, ask a leader where they're going, and they might say, down the hill to get the ball that just rolled back down. It's the difference between managing something and solving something. Don't you love solving a problem in leadership? Because then the ball stays up there. Managing something often feels like running back down to the bottom of the hill and putting it back up there and doing that on a weekly basis just because of the nature of the season that you might be in. I mean, routines. Routines are important, right? Practices, habits, disciplines. I mean, imagine if the oxen decided to do a bit of a zigzag pattern. Maybe that's how you get a bagel. I don't know. But anyways, you know, like it's just, imagine if he went off course, or yeah, that would just create all kinds of problems. So routines are absolutely important. But they can be tiring, especially when you go through a season of feeling like you are going in circles or revisiting issues that you thought you had fixed. All leadership can relate to this. This issue of routines. This ox reference that Paul refers to, Old Testament. Remember, Paul's an Old Testament scholar, right? Deuteronomy 25. When it was first mentioned in Deuteronomy 25, it was about feed your animals. Don't work them to the death. Make sure they can eat off the floor where the wheat is being processed. Don't starve them to death. Don't muzzle them. And as a result, all the Israelites had on the bumper of their carts, love your pets, right? And then in parenthesis, and then eat them, right? That was part of the whole deal, right? But now in Paul's letter to Timothy, he uses this illustration in a slightly different application by quoting this old law to express God's desire for those who labor in the field of ministry to be supported financially by those they minister to. And hence, he included the phrase of Jesus, the laborer is worthy of his reward. However, when we understand double honor, we can include financial and appreciation. I think we can see how our words of encouragement or other acts of encouragement that can include remuneration are like food, are like nutrition for the leader. For example, how life-giving and strength-giving were those words of C.S. Lewis when he comes along Tolkien and says, where's that next chapter? You can't give up now. Those words would be like a whole meal. And pick your restaurant and think of your favorite meal. Some of you like, you know, that half chicken at Swiss Chalet, which my wife is repulsed by the way, but I actually love it. And that crispy wing. Don't you love gnawing on that crispy wing and those fries? Or think of a soft ice cream cone dipped in chocolate. Some of you here, I can see one of them right here now, is addicted to this kind of food, you know? But when someone encourages you, when someone speaks into your life like that, man, it is nutritious. It empowers you. It is like food for the soul. I mean, look at this image of this ox with a muzzle. Think of this. How many leaders are starving for encouragement? And it's like they're muzzled. There's no food going into their soul. This leader, she or he may be in your organization, maybe in your school, maybe here at Bethel. And it's like they're muzzled. They're not getting their soul encouraged. How many leaders just need a word of thanks, a pat on the back, a note? When we withhold well-deserved praise, we are starving leadership. Sometimes the greatest paycheck a leader can get is not financial. Would you agree? I mean, the money's nice, of course. But sometimes the greatest paycheck in the journey of leadership has got nothing to do with the financial part. In fact, I would put it like this. As a teaching elder for the past 14 years at Bethel, my paycheck has allowed me to do what I do full time. And I'm deeply grateful for that. So 37 years total. But the paycheck that has so often filled my soul has not been the financial piece. It's been the paycheck called encouragement that has filled my soul, my spiritual belly, with the nutrition, which was exactly what was needed in order to write the next chapter. The paycheck is nice, But there's another paycheck, and I think that Paul is talking about that here too. Sure, there's the financial remuneration. We get that. But double honor. This idea of encouragement, affirmation. Without a paycheck, that paycheck encouragement, I'm not sure I would have made it through the 14 years. Not because it's always been uphill, but because, why? Simply because leaders are human too. And they need encouragement, and they deeply value encouragement. There's a great picture, and it's up on the slide actually right now, a great picture of encouragement. And I love this. This is step ahead of people, staying close enough for them to see you. This is just another image of encouragement, inspiration. I see you, you're encouraging me, I can keep my eye on you. And then I love step beside people, listening to them and talking about the journey. This, to me, is part of the valuing of people, listening to them. Your story matters. We're not just using you in this organization, in this church. We actually value you as a person. And then step behind people, sharing words of encouragement to keep them going, giving them the confidence and sometimes the courage to write that next chapter. So if you're a leader, then you will know firsthand about the labor of leadership this morning. And you'll know firsthand about the routines of leadership. And you will know that all leaders need to know the encouragement that comes from leadership. Encouragement. Not just all the encouragement, and we've had bucket loads of this over the years, not just all the encouragement that comes from progress, development, and growth, and achievement, and reaching goals, and doing so with team, and celebrating those reached goals, and tons of learning experiences together. Those have been in abundance. But the kind of encouragement that I'm talking about, the encouragement that comes from you and me coming alongside that leader and helping them excel. Where's that next chapter? You can't give up now. Encouragement, giving them confidence and giving them courage. In one of the more obscure exhibits in the Smithsonian Institute, displays the personal effects that were found on Abraham Lincoln the night he was shot. And there's a picture of those articles. And I'm not going to go and list all those, but you can see that there. But one of the interesting things that was found on him, apparently, was 8 newspaper clippings Lincoln had cut out and saved. In his pocket, 8 newspaper clippings. And all of these clippings praised him. Every one of them. Why would the 16th president carry around clippings like that? Well, maybe because leaders are human too. In fact, one writer says this: history remembers Lincoln as a folk hero, a president's president. Was Lincoln an egomaniac? Hardly. When Lincoln was president, he wasn't as popular as he became after his death. The nation was bitterly divided, and Lincoln's leadership was constantly threatened. He was the object of critical press, so Abraham Lincoln needed something in his pocket to remind himself that his critics were not his only observers. So he carried an icon or a symbol of affirmation, something that reminded him that someone out there believed in him. And I would add, perhaps those clippings had the same effect upon Lincoln as C.S. Lewis's words to Tolkien, where's that next chapter? You cannot give up now. So here's the encouragement for you this morning, church body. As we talk about, I mean, you may think of leadership in your work context. You might think of leadership here at Bethel. I want you to think about leadership here at Bethel just as we conclude, but your application may go far and above and beyond just Bethel. But here's the challenge. Can everyone here this morning put a newspaper clipping in a leader's pocket this week? Now think of your work. That's great context. But think of Bethel too. Can you put one newspaper clipping in one leader's pocket this week? Encouragement. I'm not talking about me, just in case you know. It's not like, hey, I'm leaving, I need your encouragement, bring it on. No, not at all. I am talking about the leadership at Bethel. One newspaper clipping. Put it in their pocket. And then here's the other ask, and I think this is actually even the bigger one. Pray for them that they would know the encouragement that comes from being yoked with Jesus. Matthew 11 says this, "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light." Now that's a whole sermon, that text. But we're yoked with Jesus. Every one of our leaders is yoked to Jesus. And that's a picture of submission. Putting the yoke on yourself. That's a context of whatever I'm doing is going to be a transformational experience. My heart is going to be matured and grow in this leadership context. It's the imagery of that I'm walking with Jesus in whatever I am doing. And one of those things that I might be doing is called leadership. In fact, in the second book that Paul writes Timothy, he, I think, references this issue of being yoked with Jesus. He says in 2 Timothy verse 16, "At my first offense, no one came to stand by me." So Paul's in that bucket of cold water all by himself. "All deserted me." Wow. "May it not be charged against them. But I love this line. But the Lord stood by me and strengthened me." I think he was in the bucket with Paul, because that's what the cross is all about, right? "So that through me the message might be fully proclaimed, and all the Gentiles might hear it, so, and so I was rescued from the lion's mouth." I was strengthened. The word means to be, I was made capable. But here's the point. This was not just, where's that next chapter? You can't quit now. If we interpreted it that way, we would dumb it down completely. This was not a pep talk from the chief pep talker, Jesus. Paul is talking about something supernatural here. This was Jesus empowering, strengthening Paul by the Spirit. This was Paul experiencing Jesus in the bucket of cold water. This was Paul experiencing divine strength. This was Paul experiencing intimacy with Jesus in the labor and the routines of leadership. And that, my friends, is our biggest prayer these days for our leadership. That they might know Jesus and the same power that raised Jesus from the dead that is working in and through them to sustain them. So put a newspaper clipping in a leader's pocket. That's easy. That's good. But pray for our leadership that in the process of leading and agreeing and disagreeing at times and working through difficult issues, that this would actually be a journey of personal transformation, character reshaping, the deepening of faith. Because there's nothing like being on a leadership team, whether it's our board, our elders, our staff, or all of the teams that make this thing happen. Being on those teams, and iron is sharpening iron, and Jesus is yoked to the team. And this isn't just about me doing something out here. This is about Jesus doing something in here. So can you pray that prayer for Bethel leadership these days? That would be the greatest encouragement. So will you bow with me as we pray, and then as Will comes up and his team